Oh yeah, welcome in everybody, and thank you for checking out the first episode of All My Friends Have Plans. I'm Alex Urban, I'm the host. Goodness gracious. Not off to a great start, but I'm leaving it in there because this show is raw, this show is real, and yeah, man, I'm just excited to get into it, man, so let's get started. Coming up later on the show, we do have an interview with, what can I say about this guy? He's a podcaster, he's an actor, he's an improviser, he's just an overall great dude, man, and I'm glad I got him for the first episode of the show. His name's Edward Rosales. He is from the Finger Guns podcast, and we're going to be talking to him a little bit later. But first, I just wanted to jump into some talking, and we could fade that song down and get right into it, man. There it is, man. Welcome to the show. Thank you guys for checking it out. I greatly appreciate you. Chances are good that I know you in real life, so I just want to let you know right now that I greatly appreciate the support. And to be completely honest with you, that's kind of why I'm doing this show. You know, I realize that I have a lot of friends and a lot of family in my life that have supported me for a very long time. And I have a lot of friends that have a lot to tell and a lot to say and a lot to give. You know, whether it's a lot of great stories or some good art, some comedy, some podcasting, like my future, you know, like my guest here has today. You know, whatever it is, man, I want to help them get that to you. And if you're one of those people that has something to offer, then I want to help you get that to them. All right. And that's basically what the show is about. Before we jump into the interview, I do want to talk about the elephant in the room, though. And that elephant in the room is the global pandemic that we are all experiencing right now. Coronavirus, man, I feel like it's such a horrible, horrible topic for any podcast to touch that this is going to be the only thing that I say about the coronavirus, okay? I don't know enough about the coronavirus to have an educated opinion about the coronavirus. I see what experts are saying. I see refutations to what those experts are saying. I have an opinion on what I believe to be true. But I'm not going to be just like every other podcast host. And if you listen to podcasts within the past, you know, couple months, you'll know that it is everywhere, man. These podcasters, it's like it's a requirement for you to say, oh, I don't want to talk about the coronavirus, and then go on for the next 25 minutes about why we shouldn't be shutting down for the coronavirus. I'm tired of hearing about it, and it's not what I'm going to talk about on my podcast. However, I am going to talk about one thing that happened to me because of the coronavirus, because I think it's funny. It was one of the weirdest things that's ever happened to me, and it was an experience that I had at a Target store in Walnut Creek. All right, so I'm in Walnut Creek, and I need to buy some stuff, right? I need some snacks, I need some water, I need, you know, some almonds, and I'm looking to get some beef jerky and stuff, just whatever, just some stuff. I'm bored in my car. I work out of my car. If you didn't know, I'm a delivery driver, so I'm just hanging out in my car all day, and I needed some carbless snacks, right? So I'm thinking I'm going to go to Walmart at first, but then I remembered this was around the time when stores started making you wait in line to get in, and I'll be damned if I ever have to tell somebody that I waited in line to get into a Walmart. All right? That is never going to happen. That's never going to be anything that I ever say, because I will never wait in line to get into a Walmart. The reason for that being, I hate Walmart. And I think that most people do too. You know, you go to a Target and, like, sure, it's, I mean, some people seem to like Target. I find it to be a soulless kind of corporate entity, but some people find it heartwarming. At least they have that picture of that dog on the walls and stuff on the posters. I think that's pretty dope. They also have popcorn. I don't eat popcorn anymore because I'm keto right now, but at least they have that kind of stuff, right? What does Walmart have? McDonald's and despair. That's what Walmart has inside it. It's just a McDonald's where you can get a McChicken, or, you know, some fries or whatever. But then once you get past the McDonald's, it's just dread and despair. And you can say that you don't feel that. You can lie to yourself if you want, but don't lie to me. All right? You know in your heart of hearts that when you walk into a Walmart, your heart and your stomach kind of just sinks just a little bit, man. You walk into a Target and it's not the same way. So I feel like, all right, whatever. I'll wait in line to get into the Target. I have to buy some stuff. I'm going to wait in line wherever I go. Might as well make it be Target, right? So I get into the Target, and first thing I see is the bathroom. And I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe I do need to use the bathroom, right? I didn't really need to go before, but I decided it's right here, and I'm going to need to use it eventually, so let's just do it right now, right? So I go into the bathroom, and it is nice. It's a Target bathroom. It's very normal. It's a very clean and empty Target bathroom, right? So I'm pretty happy about that. What I heard next ruined my mood. And I'll tell you why. I heard a song that not only did I find this song unnecessary, like the very existence of the song was not necessary, but I actually felt like it should not exist. Meaning that the world is now a worse place for having it exist. Okay? That song is Take a Bow by Rihanna. Oh, wait, no. It's not just Take a Bow by Rihanna, though, because that song in and of itself is emotional and beautiful. You know, I don't think that she wrote the lyrics, but she sang the hell out of them, you know, and you could feel the pain behind those words. And it's a very emotional song. It's a very serious song. For those of you that don't know, it's about a woman ending a relationship that she has known is a sham for a while now. And this guy is just acting, keeping up appearances. They both really are. It's very sad. It's something that happens in real life. And it's a tragedy every single time it happens. And some DJ decided that what that song needed was a dance remix. You know what that means? That means that somebody heard this song. Somebody heard this woman pouring out her breaking heart and her soul right onto wax or, you know, digital ones and zeros, whatever music is recorded on nowadays, just pouring it out. And he said, oh, man, this is a great song. You know what it needs? It needs people to dry hump each other on a dance floor when they hear this. I was shocked, frankly, that that song exists. I don't think it needs to, and, you know, that's a bad move. That's not cool by that DJ to do that, and it's not cool by Target to play it, okay? It's not the fact that it was playing in the bathroom. It could have been playing anywhere. I don't need to hear that. That's a very sad song, and also it's confusing when you add the dance thing, but whatever. I didn't go there to use the bathroom. The bathroom is not the main attraction of this interaction, right? But I figure I'm going to go shopping. Leave the bathroom. I wash my hands. I go out to the snack aisle. I get to the almonds. I'm looking for the kind of almonds that I want, that the lightly salted kind. And I'm looking. I see all the different ones. And then on the other side of the aisle, or on the other side of the shelf, rather, I hear a very Caucasian sounding voice saying a very inappropriate word for a Caucasian sounding voice to be saying. All right, this word rhymes with the word that is the opposite of the word smaller. And I am not allowed to say this word, even if it's a lyric on a rap song, and I know that, and I'm fine with it. Okay, and I understand that. You're not allowed to say the word when your skin's my color, man. And he was saying it. It was weird because he wasn't. This is like a richer kind of area. It was in Walnut Creek, California, so it's kind of like a more affluent area. And so normally, when you hear a white-sounding voice say that word in a richer area, you might assume that he's saying it in a racist way, that he's calling somebody that word. But he was like, you know, this. I'm going to say the word person instead because that's a word that is very neutral for all races. That we all can say person. Right, so he's like, you know, this person over here doing that, like, I'm that person. Like, he said, I'm that person. He didn't say person, but he said, I'm that person. And I was like, what? Like, this dude's not that person. Like, he's clearly not. I can hear that he's not, but maybe he is, right? Because he was so confident in the way that he was saying it, and it sounded so natural. He used it about himself, and he wasn't being racist about it. I was like, you know what? Maybe I'm the one that's being racist. You know, maybe this Caucasian-sounding voice is actually, you know, belongs to a a non-Caucasian individual. You know what I'm saying? A person of color is what they what the politically correct crowd, I believe, is calling them these days. People, persons of color. Right? So this is a maybe this is a person. I don't know. Maybe this is not a white person at all. But then, right when I started to give him the benefit of the doubt, thus doubting my own racial tolerance level, he comes around the corner, and wouldn't you know it, the man looks like the big fat thumb guy from what's that movie? It's Wall-E, from Wall-E. You know the movie where the robot cleans up the earth because everybody's a fat slob? He looked like that guy, like the guy in the red suit with the big, like his head and neck looks like a thumb. And he had blonde hair on top of it, and like his neck is like the bottom part of the thumb, and then his head is the top part of the thumb, and then there was like blonde hair on top. And I may just be imagining this because it's like the stereotype, but he had sunglasses clipped on his tank top. But that could just be, I could be adding that to the fact, but I know for a fact that it was a toe-looking white man, right, who was saying that word. And I was like, man, that is strike two right now for this target, okay? That's something that if that happened in Walmart, I would just shake my head and chuckle to myself, all right? But in Target, dude, I was taken aback by that. I couldn't believe, because he was just saying that word like loud and proud, like he didn't know that I was a white person as well, and that I wasn't going to say anything because A, I don't believe that it's my fight to fight, and B, I was maybe possibly not you know, ready to have a confrontation because I had maybe partaken in some weed. So I maybe wasn't really feeling like I wanted to get into a fight about like racial sensitivity and whatnot in the middle of this Target, or what I thought was a Target, but it's turning out to be more and more like a little Walmart Junior. All right. But, you know, I was like, whatever. I got my almonds. I found the thing I wanted and grabbed the beef jerky and I grabbed my water case and I just started walking toward the self-checkout line, right? And I'm like, all right, I'm just going to get in line right here and it's going to be all good. I'm walking toward this man who's in line, and this part of the story, when it happened and when I lived it, I thought was the funniest part of the story. But what it turns out, actually, now that, you know, we're this deep into the quarantine, it actually kind of makes the most sense. This was right when stores started making you wait in line and do social distancing and stuff. You didn't have to wear a mask at this point, but this guy was wearing a cloth mask. Okay, so this is something that he had either already had or recently bought in order to be prepared for the virus. I walked up to him and I'm like, all right, he's being careful. That's cool. I figure I'm going to give him like a good 10 feet of space, right? Because it's not that many people in the Target right now. And social distancing is like fairly new. I want to make sure that everybody in here knows that I'm down with it. All right. I'm trying to be very polite. My plan was this. I'm going to walk close. I'm going to walk about 10 feet away from this guy. There was a clothes, like a rack, right? Just right there by the main aisle, right? So I'm going to go to my left through the aisle between two racks, and then I'm going to go back behind the rack, and I'm going to go right, and then I'm going to go right again, so I'll end up behind this man, right? And that was my plan. And then I figured maybe he would turn around, see me standing on the dot. He would nod at me. I would smile at him and say, hello, sir. And then maybe, you know, who knows? This is Walnut Creek, man. That guy might be rich. And I say hello. Next thing you know, I'm set for life, and this show, I don't need to advertise on it. You feel me? Like, I don't need to do this show necessarily if I make the right friend in Walnut Creek. I'm just trying to be cool with everybody. But that didn't happen, because what did happen was I get about 10, 11 feet away from this guy, and he looks at me dead in the eyes, and I shit you not, he turns around and runs. He takes like 4 steps away from me, turned around and ran to like 2 of the social distancing dots away. And I was like, what the, like, I looked behind me to see if somebody else was coming up with like a machete or like a pipe wrench or something ready to attack this dude or something, right? I didn't know what was going on. And so I stood on the dot and I looked at the guy and I was like, hey man, I don't have to cut you. Like, you can get your spot back in line. I can go behind you. And then he looked at me as if I was like robbing him. And he was like, no. Just like, as if he was like, no, just go. And I was like, what the okay, but I did. I mean, I did just go. I wasn't going to argue with him and be like, no, you have to go in front of me because you were here first. It was just a very weird thing. And like, that is something that I would expect to happen at Walmart. I had three Walmart type things happen to me on this one Target trip. And that is why I'm here to tell all of you right now that the Walmart in Walnut Creek, California, or the Target rather in Walnut Creek, California, is just a Walmart with a red paint job. All right, and that's my official hypothesis on this. I may have to go back and test it. I'm not exactly sure. I haven't been there since. That was like 2.5 months ago. I haven't been there since because I feel weird about it, man. I talked about the despair that you get from Walmart before, and now when I think about that Target, I get the same feeling. All right, I don't need to be, you know, grinded with some girl to Rihanna's most vulnerable emotional state. Dude, I don't need to hear white people using the N-word all the time, just cavalierly, just like as if he was, like as if he invented it. Like, he was very comfortable with that vernacular. It wasn't like he was out there like following a script because he was being pranked or something. Like, nah, this is how he talked. I'm that person. That's what he said. He said, I'm that person. And he had no hesitation and no wavering, no second thought about it. I'm that person. And then the guy running away from me, like I said, that one makes the most sense now. Because now we're pretty deep into this quarantine thing, and people are starting to take it very seriously. I think people are also getting tired of it, but people like that guy definitely taking it seriously, man. I hope that guy's okay, actually, now that I think about it. You know, because I thought, like, maybe he has some kind of, like, immuno disorder or something, but then I'm like, why would he even be there, right? If it was that big of a deal where he needed to run for his life when he saw me, you know? Look, I'm 6'4", 300 pounds. Like, I understand that I can be an intimidating figure, but like, I'm very nice, you know, and I smiled at that guy. I smiled at him, and he treated me like a criminal. And that's what happens when you go to Walmart, not Target. So I'm just saying, man, if you go to that Target, just be careful and be aware that you might have a Walmart moment. But yeah, man, that happened to me. That's a true story. That's a completely true story. I didn't embellish any of it, if you can believe that. Like, that man literally ran away from me. Unbelievable. Anyway, man, we got an interview coming up. My boy, Edward J. Rosales. Edward James, as he changed his name to, on the Finger Guns podcast. I know that's canon on that show. We called him Edward Rosales here, though. He joins me via the internet, and we will have that conversation right after this. So stay tuned, and we will be right back. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the show. Today's guest, and every other guest I'll ever have, is a personal friend of mine. If that weren't enough, he's also an actor / comedian / improviser / podcaster / just overall super solid dude. Give it up in your cars or cubicles or wherever you're listening to this for the one and only Edward Rosales. Edward, how are you, bud?
How you doing, Alex? How you doing?
Oh, man, I'm real good. For those who don't know, which is probably everybody listening to this right now, Edward and I grew up together in the same hometown, went to high school, junior high together, all that stuff. Since then, you have moved to L.A.
Yeah, I moved to L.A. A couple years after high school. I did a little bit of community college, and then, I packed my things up, and I bounced.
So how's L.A. treating you, man? Was it something that that you had to kind of figure out as you were there, or did you kind of have an idea of what it would be like? Or
what's it like? I mean, as a kid, you know, my parents would take me to Disneyland maybe once every, you know, 5 years or so with me and my siblings. So I didn't have any idea of what LA was really like. Just because, I mean, people sometimes when it's a kid, you just experience Disneyland or, sure, or something like that. And beaches are everywhere, beaches all over the world, the Bay Area where we grew up.
Right, right.
But yeah, I mean, I moved into LA and I didn't really know what to expect. I moved here for college and it was quite an experience getting settled in at first, since, I mean, I knew no one except the roommate that I moved down here with.
Okay. So actually I was going to ask, did you move down there with anybody? And also you answered that question already, so let's skip to the next one. When did you know that's what you wanted to do? Because when we were growing up, I remember you always being a funny, entertaining guy. And when I heard that you were getting into entertainment, it made perfect sense to me. So when did you know that's what you wanted to do?
I didn't know until I would say my second year of community college. I think, I really do have to give a lot of thanks though to my ninth grade English teacher. You might remember him, named Brandon Harrington.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember. Yeah, Mr. Harrington. Yeah.
I mean, him and his father were just so instrumental at Newark, just in terms of the uplifting students and setting up the theater program to the high degree that they did have it at the time. Mm-hmm. And I remember I had him as my ninth grade English teacher, and we were doing little skits for a book that we read, and he pulled me aside after one of them and he said, "Hey man, you should audition for the show. I promise you, you'll like it." And I mean, back then I was into sports and it was my freshman year, and right, you know, theater just seemed, I mean, the connotation of like theater nerds and theater geeks just seemed so foreign to me that I was all like, I just appreciated him and I appreciated the vote of confidence, but I never really gave it a second thought.
I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
So I mean, over the years throughout high school, me and him became real close and he became a very good friend of mine. And I think I remember the summer of junior year heading into senior year. I remember I was just sitting in front of a computer and I just thought to myself, I mean, what if I got this show for high school? Like, I've made all these great friends, obviously, and I've had fun times. But like, what do I have to really show for it? And right, it felt empty. And then that's when I decided my senior year, I was going to do as much as I could. And I was going to stick my nose into pretty much everything that I could. So I did a little bit of leadership. And then I did a little bit of sports. Mm-hmm. I did a little bit of like, we had like, it was called the MASS program. I don't know if you remember that. It's like Marine and space technology or something like that. And then yeah, I auditioned for the show that they were doing and I got in and I got hooked. I got hooked my senior year and Brandon looked at me and he was all like, I knew it. I knew it. Yeah. You should have done it sooner. And I was like, you were right.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I definitely thought the same thing, man, about the drama nerds. I'm not trying to be a theater nerd. I'm a jock, right? I'm a baseball player.
Yeah.
That was my identity. I was definitely an athlete first and then everything else second. But by the end of my high school career, that guy was probably, if not the role model that I had, he was definitely one of the few.
I understand.
At that school.
I understand completely.
And it really kind of helps you change your perspective and really learn stuff. I think theater is a very important program. I think that everybody should be involved in some kind of the arts in one way or the other, but theater is obviously my favorite.
I agree. I agree completely.
And it seems like it's yours too.
But it was interesting because, so I did theater my last year of high school and then, I mean, I had decent grades, but I didn't have any motivation or I didn't have any idea of what I wanted to do. I think growing up, I wanted to be an athlete. So I wanted to be a soccer player growing up.
Okay.
And then in like junior high and middle school, I thought about maybe becoming a fireman or maybe becoming a chef. And at the end of high school, I was just completely lost. So I figured instead of going out to a university and not knowing what I wanted to do, I wanted to take time and find out what I want to do. My first year of community college was just the first year was an experience of me getting accustomed to, I guess, being an adult and independent.
Right.
And then
that was in the Bay Area. That was at Ohlone.
Yeah. And it's crazy because the second semester that I had, my first semester was whatever. I took just nothing but math courses, English courses, science courses, the basics.
Yeah.
And I took nothing that interested me. So my second semester, I decided I'm going to still do my curriculum, but I want to take one class that's going to interest me. And the one class that I decided on was improv.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was improv, and it was, I mean, it was the very basics, and it was taught by a guy named Jeff Kramer, who started up the San Jose improv company. What's it called? Comedy Sports. The San Jose Comedy
Sports.
Oh, yeah,
Comedy Sports. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so he, from my recollection, he started the San Jose company up, and he was teaching at Ohlone as well, and I just remember taking the class and loving improv. It was so much fun, and it kind of, in some ways, it kind of mirrored of what I do sort of as a performer on the acting side of things, because I had just done acting for a year at Newark, and then little did I know I was going to continue acting, but I did improv, which is so much more freeing, and that sort of instilled me the confidence to sort of experiment and be a little bit more loose when performing. Right.
That's one of the things I love about improv, is because obviously, like, stand-up, for example, is, for most stand-ups, is very regimented. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of guys that work with the crowd and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's kind of a wild card, but they calculate this stuff out, which is cool. And I do love stand-up, and I'm not knocking it, but improv is just so spontaneous. You know, it's the fact that you don't know what's going to happen. That I think is very exciting. And also, on the topic of improv, I did want to talk to you about your podcast.
Of course, yeah.
This podcast is called Finger Guns Comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It is hilarious, dude. I got to tell you, I slept on it a little bit when I first heard about it. I gave it a chance like maybe a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't in the mood to listen to anything at the time, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Right? So I heard it and I was like, yeah, it's pretty funny, but, you know, whatever. And then I slept on it. A couple months ago, I saw you guys posted something on Instagram, and I just kind of went down the rabbit hole, man. And that show is so good. I cannot recommend it highly enough to people. If I'm a new listener, if I've never heard of the show, what can I expect on the show? We've talked about improv a little bit. But,
yeah, I mean, you can expect a lot of improv. It's basically what Finger Guns Comedy is. We're sort of it's a collection of individuals. We're all friends who kind of came together after college, and we're trying to decide what now. And it was, we tried to just become as creative as possible and put all our efforts into creating something, and that's what it became. Granted, the Finger Guns Comedy that started initially is drastically different in a sense than the one it is now. But the main core of us performing for the audience, creating characters, narratives, it's all still there. But for example, when we first started, we had this amalgamation of shows. I compare it to like a TV station where...
Yeah, that's what I thought. It was like a podcast network almost, right? That's like exactly, a Finger Guns network.
Yeah, that's exactly what we started off as. So much like a TV network, like say Fox, for example, has a show on at 7 and has a show on at 8, and every week is different. That's kind of how we were. We would release an episode a week, and it was all sort of different shows.
Oh, I see. So it wasn't you and the typical Finger Guns cast every single time in a room doing different shows. It was like literally different shows, like different hosts and
absolutely
different people on.
Yeah. So we, for example, one of my favorite shows, and the first show that really helped us get off the ground, was called Alphas. And it was just, it was us, it was the four guys who were alphas, who were trying to give relationship advice to a beta.
Yeah. Okay, sure.
And that was the initial start of the show. And I urge everyone to go listen to it, just because it has such a beautiful story arc that was constructed sort of naturally, episode by episode as it went on, that it became a thing of its own. And at the end of the day, it's one of the things that I'm most proud about.
I heard them on an episode of Finger Guns recently. I think it was a Valentine's Day
special.
Something they were on.
They're fantastic.
They're very good, man. It's some good stuff. And I'm not just saying this because you're my friend. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed myself and how much I could not wait to get to the next episode.
I appreciate it, man. I mean, that's what it really is. I mean, I know everyone. We're all friends and all, and obviously, I'm going to support my friends and what they do.
Yeah.
But I always want to put out the best possible content if I'm putting out content.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, I hope my friends like it and I hope that they enjoy it. But it's more than just for my friends. It's for everyone that either, you know, wants an hour to escape or they just want to put it on in the background and they'll have a couple laughs here and there. Or someone who's a devoted fan, and we appreciate everyone in between.
You know, it's something that you can drive to, you can chill to, you can even fall asleep to it. It's very good. It's a lot more professional than I think I maybe expected at first.
I mean, that's really due to our producer, who's also like our main host, Adam Macias. I do want to give him a quick shout out. He's a musician. He's a sound engineer by trade, but he is just amazing, man. Like me and him and some of the people, obviously we all butt heads just because we're so creative and we always want to put the best possible stuff forward.
Yeah.
And Adam is just the one guy who at the end of the day, anything that he does, whether it sometimes rubs us the wrong way or sometimes it rubs us the right way or whatever the expression is, mm-hmm. It's all about what can we do to make the show better and to get bigger and to get ourselves better.
So obviously Finger Guns is kind of like the main chick, right? Do you have anything else online? Because right now it's a quarantine. Obviously we can't see you perform live. Is there anything online is there anything more that we can see you on? I mean, do you do other podcast appearances or anything like that? We need more Edward.
Yeah. I mean, I've done a couple podcasts. I know there's one podcast in particular that I just did. It was in March. And by pure happenstance, the first couple of times we tried to record didn't go so well. The audio kept going in and out. Mm. And I mean, I was completely fine. I was doing it for a friend, and he's still a very good friend of mine. And he's been on the show a bunch of times. But I guess it never came out. And I assume it's because of the audio went haywire. But besides that, I mean, we've really been just sort of sticking to our guns here at the Finger Guns, sticking to ourselves.
I get it. I get it.
I may release maybe like a little video every now and then just for my sake, maybe on Instagram or on Twitter. I mean, to be completely honest, Instagram and Twitter is where I do a lot of my own sort of self-promoting, whether it's a little Valentine's Day song I did on Instagram or whether it's a couple a cheesecake remixes that I do on my Twitter.
Right.
It's just fun things that maybe I'm in the moment to do.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. But you don't have any projects coming out online necessarily right now anytime soon.
I mean, not at the moment. I mean, we do have something.
It's tough,
we do something special. We do have something cooking up right now that I don't want to give too much away for Finger Guns. But right now it's completely dependent on everyone's schedule sort of linking up. You know, some people have started returning back to like the service industry of like to-go's. Yeah. And it's a little hectic right now, as strange as it may be, considering we're all home. But as soon as we get our schedules linked up and everyone's ready to go, we got something really funny, really special, really different from what we've done on Finger Guns. And I think people are going to enjoy it a lot.
That's great, man. I'm looking forward to that. Like I said, I'm a big fan of the podcast. Big fan of yours personally. And let me ask you this. Obviously, like we're talking about right now, the new normal is it's an odd time right now for everybody, but especially for performers, because you can't really get on stage in front of a crowd right now. There's no crowds to be performed to. But when things were normal and when things get back to normal, which I'm, you know, feeling a little bit less and less safe assuming is going to happen, but for the sake of the interview, I can get myself there. When we get back to normal, like what kind of stuff can we see you doing? Are you more of a stand-up? Are you more of an improviser, like with an improv troupe? Do you act in plays on stage, or like what's kind of your arena?
Bread and butter.
Yeah.
I pride myself, completely honest, on my acting ability. I think I'm an actor first. I think comedian's such a term that it's so, I don't want to say flip-floppy, but it can mean so many different things.
It's very
to
wide
different
open.
People. Yeah. It's such a wide open, vague term, because a comedian could describe maybe a stand-up comic or an improviser or someone who maybe does sketch comedy, such as the guys on SNL.
No, yeah, you're right. You're right about that. Yeah. Comedian is a real catch-all term for anybody in the comedy art, I guess.
I think I always gravitated towards comedy as a kid. I think growing up, I had sort of this uh, this innate sense to want to be and try to be funny just because it seemed fun and making people laugh was fun.
Well, like I said, you were pretty good at it too.
I appreciate it. And I think getting into acting, it sort of opened up the flip side, you know, to be in more sort of dramatic roles, to sort of get into these characters that's they often mimic real life emotions and events just right. to the extreme. But that doesn't mean that we can't necessarily connect to it. And I found a lot of pleasure and a lot of solace in that. And if I can tell this quick story on how I sort of realized that it was during community college. It was my last year there. And I had a friend whose name is Rich Sinfio. He's a wonderful guy, wonderful director out in Chicago. I love you, Rich, who had finished writing sort of an autobiographical one act about a relationship he was in.
Okay.
And I remember we're very good friends. He's like a brother to me. And he came up to me and he said, "I wrote this and I can't see anyone else doing it besides you."
And I feel good.
I mean, it felt like he was trusting me with something and I wanted to do it to the best of my abilities.
Sure. Yeah.
And it was about him and his boyfriend or his ex-boyfriend and just the relationship and all the trauma and all that he had gone through personally in it. Hmm. And it was a wonderful, moving story. And it presented a lot of challenges that I hadn't done up until then. And right. I remember the first time that we performed it in front of people, opening night. I'm on stage and I'm performing, so I don't take notice of the audience and their reaction. Sure. But after the show's over, I come out, I say hi to my friends, and Rich just comes up to me and he hugs me and he starts crying. And it meant the world for him to see that.
Wow.
And I had a bunch of other people come up to me saying how much they love the performance. And I mean, I was only a small part of that. And I take all the compliments I can get, obviously. And I thank them for it. But it just felt, it felt good being able to help people connect to something, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. I feel like I'm a lot like you in terms of I gravitate toward comedy as well. You know, like that's kind of my bread and butter when it comes to entertainment. But it feels almost freeing in a way to make yourself vulnerable like that to connect to real human emotion. Because when you're on stage being funny, doing improv or whatever, you're going for a laugh and you're not necessarily trying to truly represent somebody or something or some feeling. And when you're acting on stage in a play production or in a dramatic production like that, it's completely different. I know there's a lot of different schools of thought. If you're a dramatic actor, a lot of people think that I feel like a lot of times actors are very humble when it's like, oh, anybody can do drama or anybody can do comedy. But going from one to the other is always impressive. And it's a lot of fun, I think, too.
It is. I mean, it also presents a different challenge. And I mean, I can only speak for myself, but I enjoy those challenges in terms to see how far I can take myself in this direction. And how can I do this to the best of my ability and maybe even go further than that?
Right. Well, that brings up a good point. What would you like to do? I mean, how much further would you like to go? And are you trying to be like on stage for a lot of the career? Are you trying to be on film, on camera? Are you looking to do movies or TV? Or do you want to be behind the camera? Like what's the goal for you? Because I'm not knocking podcasts. Obviously, I am doing one. I have two, actually. So like I love podcasts, but you didn't move to LA to become a podcaster.
No, you're right. I moved to LA to pursue acting, and I started obviously as a stage actor doing theater, and that's something that I'm always going to hold like onto. It'll always have a special place in my heart. But I mean, growing up, movies were everything to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I love movies and I still do. Right. And sort of finding myself in the entertainment industry and studying acting has only deepened my love for movies, for actors, for performances. And honestly, I've been thinking about this for a long time of what I want to accomplish at the end of the day when I put my hat down when I put when I hang my shoes up, speaking.
Sure.
You know, speaking metaphorically when I hang them up.
Right. Nobody hangs up actual shoes. It's just a metaphorical shoe.
And it's just it's something that I mean I've been so inspired by different people and actors and role models that I want to do the same. I want to sort of inspire other people, whether it be actors or musicians, just people in any genre of life, any profession of life, just to inspire them. And I think my family also is, I want to take care of them. I want them to not have to worry monetarily wise, just because that's something that, I mean, we sort of, we didn't grow up, you know, wealthy, and we went through some troubles, and I don't want my family, I mean, I want my future family to not have to worry about those things. Because I think at the end of the day, every parent wants to give their child a better life than they had.
I would like to think so. Yeah, sure.
But yeah, I mean, and then just, I mean, just selfishly speaking, I mean, I want to, you know, obviously an Oscar or a big film, something. I mean, my sights are set on the highest possible stage.
As they should be.
And yeah, and that's what I'm striving for.
Did you ever think about, you know, being on the creative side of stuff, or did you, are you just kind of more of an actor type? Like, would you think about writing, or do you write or create, direct? Do you want to be a showrunner someday or something? Or
I mean, showrunning is such a I don't know how to describe it. I mean, I guess we have different showrunners for different shows that we do for the finger guns or that we used to. But in terms of like a showrunner for like a big production, it's such a different language to me. Like, I don't even know what the first step of it would be. I wouldn't even experience in it. But in terms of like directing and writing, I mean, I've done some writing in the past. I've done some directing in the past as well. Granted, it was stage. And it was all about challenges. It was all about how can I take this of what I want to do and present it to the people so that they feel the same way that I feel about this. So right. I'm never going to say no to an opportunity that arises in terms of if I have a chance to direct something, or even if I have just a chance to create something, any idea that I have that I feel, passionate about, I'm more than happy to spend any amount of my free time detailing it, working it out so that I can present it. But a lot of it is, to be honest, I have a lot of like just random notes and ideas just scattered throughout journals and writings and on my phone as well, of just like little tidbits that come to me here and there. And I'm like, oh, this is funny. That's funny. Oh, this could be funny. And it's just a matter of, Is this worth spending my time, or was this just a momentary thought that I found funny?
Oh, you know, that's a good point, actually, because I've been saving some ideas too. And yesterday I looked in my notes app and I'm like reading through a lot of the stuff and I'm like, oh man, I'm not as funny as I thought I was. But I guess if you can read back and laugh again at the joke, I guess that's how you know it's probably worth something. But
yeah.
You know, just those sometimes momentary fleeting thoughts are just like, they're funny in the moment. And if you're talking to somebody in conversation, you can say that joke and they'll chuckle, but don't put it on an album.
Yeah, I understand completely.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, that's going to pretty much do it here, Edward. You are one of my favorite people, and I'm not just saying that because you're on my show. Anytime I see a social media post from you, or I hear or see that a new episode came out, I'm always looking forward to hear your parts. You're my boy, and thank you so much for doing this podcast.
I appreciate it, bud. Thank you for having me on. I mean, I know we haven't talked in a long time, but really, truly, growing up in high school, I know you were only there for a year, but we spent a lot of that year together.
We did, yeah.
I mean, it was hanging out after school, taking buses home, playing sports together.
Yeah, playing hockey in what's his name, Richie's driveway.
Yeah, I still want to apologize to Chris for slapping him in the face with that hockey stick.
Oh, well, he's going to hear this. So.
Love you, Chris. I hope you're doing well. But yeah, I mean, those times are treasured. Anytime I see you on Instagram or anything, it's obviously nothing but love. And I feel really, really loved that you feel the same way back.
Yeah, man, it's great. And let's not wait until we're on mics and on a podcast to talk again, man. Like you said, it has been a long time. It's been way too long, and we got to rectify that situation, no doubt.
Yeah.
Edward is on Instagram and Twitter at Edward J. Rosales. Go follow him. He is a great follow. I've been talking about it pretty much this whole interview. And like I said before, he's just a great dude. So even if he's posting stuff that's not entertainment related, just follow the guy. You will not regret it, I promise.
Yeah, dude, I'm a cute kid. So even if it's not funny, I'm nice to look at.
Oh, yeah. So that's the other thing. Even if he records himself telling a joke and it's not funny, you still at least get a little bit of eye candy, which is great. Also, check out the podcast. They're on social medias at Go Finger Guns. And you can hit up fingergunscomedy.com for some more. We got on their merch, and do you have any like videos or clips?
Yeah, we have merch. We have videos of like live podcasts that we record in advance. We also, anytime we go live, you can usually find us on there, like on the live button that we have on the little. I mean, it's not a complicated website. You'll figure it out.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. They're all at the top of the screen there. You just got to touch it with your finger, and then it starts out, and it. Or I'm assuming if people are on phones because it's the 21st century.
Right, but,
you
know,
you could also
right.
click it on the computer too. Yeah, man, that's gonna do it. The podcast is Finger Guns. Check it out. It's on Spotify. That's where I listen to it.
Yeah, please go check us out. Leave us a comment. Leave us a review. Every bit of help helps. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, you got any wisdom to share with our audience at home during this troubling time?
I mean, just I know it sounds crazy, but take a break. I know it seems like we're all in a break, one huge long break where we're all just cooped up inside. But sometimes you just need a mental break, a mental getaway from the crazy world, and I encourage it. I know some people see, you know, maybe taking downtime as laziness or as a wasted amount of time, but nah. I truly believe that, I mean, mental health is super important, and get your mental health straight and get it right, get it tight, and be on the, I mean, look out for yourself especially.
Wow, I absolutely put you on the spot with that one, and you nailed it. Some poignant and very simple, easy to follow advice from our boy Edward Rosales. Once again, everybody at home, give him a big hand. I know we can't hear you right now, but I'm just going to assume that we're all clapping for him.
I appreciate the love, Alex. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I love you, buddy. And that's going to do it for us, guys. So the first ever episode of All My Friends Have Plans has come to an end. I'd like to thank you guys all for listening to my podcast, and I will see you next week. Bye.